Welcome to the 140th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. Thanks for listening, and happy pre-Thanksgiving. Today, I actually have a guest again. The guest today is Ken Botts. Ken is the food service and restaurant sustainable food system strategist for the Humane Society of the United States. Ken and I first met at a Food Forward event put on by the Humane Society in Sarasota, Florida, aimed at bringing together people from schools and hospitals to talk about offering plant-based options in dining halls. And Ken is vital to this operation within the Humane Society. He goes into schools, universities, hospitals now, and introduces a way to add plant-based items onto menus to make cafeterias completely plant-based in some cases in universities. And he has a Chef Wanda with him, and they are a dynamic duo that they go in and they teach the staff on, you know, how to make these items in the big quantities that needs to be made. They work with the food service departments. They work with the chefs. They work on marketing, how to present plant-based options in the cafeteria so people know that they're there. And it's just a very, very positive thing that they do. And he is full of energy and just a pleasure to be around. So I was very honored to get to speak to him outside of one of these conferences today on the podcast. Before we get started with the interview, I just wanted to go over things that we usually do on this podcast, what's going on in my practice. And basically, I'm very excited that we are officially launching a third nutrition class next week, which will be, level three, we're going to call it. This has been evolving. We started with one, which was a beginner class to plant-based nutrition, where I talk about the science behind whole food plant-based nutrition with regards to diabetes, hypertension, coronary artery disease, and cook and do cooking demonstrations, and we go shopping. And the second level is now going to be more of a hands-on how-to menu planning together to take foods. And how do you, in our house we call it, how do you make something out of nothing? When you look in the refrigerator and you don't know what to cook, how do you come up with something that's plant-based and healthy? And then we'll also keep talking about the science and the papers talking about the way plant-based nutrition can help people stay healthy. And in the third class, level three, is going to be more of our advanced cooking class, as well as continued science. We've been talking about the China study in the advanced class. We've also talked about Doug Lyle's book, The Pleasure Trap, and we'll continue to go over things like that, because what I found out is that, learning about plant-based nutrition and that, yes, it's healthy, and yes, we can reverse diabetes and heart disease, the how-to becomes a little bit more challenging, and the why, finding your why. The light bulb comes on for different people at different times. Some people become plant-based because their spouse wanted them to become plant-based because they were unhealthy. And those people forced into being plant-based, so to speak, they're doing it, but they're really not happy about doing it. And they just really, even though they know it's good for them, doing what's good for us is not always easy. Getting up to get ready to exercise or getting started in a new routine, it's not always easy. And it takes a lot of support in those people. And, hopefully they do have family support when they're undertaking this, but oftentimes they don't. So we want to be there to help them until that light bulb comes on, so they really embrace it and they know the why they're doing it, and they really desire a want to do it, not just a need to do it. So it's been really helpful to have, these levels of classes, so people can do 1 6-week class and then just go into another 6-week class. And we're just going to keep progressing with people as long as they need to and want to be in a class. It provides a social atmosphere to talk about plant-based nutrition. And we'll just keep adding on as the desire goes and change the curriculum according with who's in the class. So it's been great fun. It's been a great support aspect for a lot of people. My next race is in December the 4th, Sacramento, the California International Marathon. So that's coming up quick. So I'm doing some running training for that. We also signed up for the Mendocino Ultra again in the springtime. So we're actually running a little trails or some few trails around here in Florida. They're flat. You know, our elevation change is about 12 feet, but it's off-road and it's there's some roots and trees. And this weekend we actually had a wild hog spotting and an alligator spotting. And I got to say, you know, being from West Virginia and being used to being in the woods and you see deer and you see turkey and you see squirrels, but I'm a little bit apprehensive on the reptile aspect of things. So it does keep you moving, but it takes a little bit getting used to. But it's really fun to be out running through the grass and the mud and all that kind of stuff. So we've been enjoying that on the weekends. We're also doing HIIT's half Ironman distance race in January. So I got to keep up the bike and the swim. So that's good. In the membership practice, we're also doing challenges. We've done a plank challenge, and now we're doing a step challenge. So it's been fun to see everybody posting on keeping up with that. I still have the backyard garden going, and it's a growing season in Florida here in the fall. So we have some Swiss chard coming up. Some beets are starting to pop up. Cauliflower, carrots, sweet potatoes continue to grow in Florida no matter what. And the herb garden is starting to come alive again. We also started a tower garden, which is somewhat of it's a hydroponic system that you can put on your lanai. And so we have kale and cucumbers and tomatoes and peppers and lettuce growing in that. So I'm anxious to see how that goes. You know, so far the little seedlings of tomatoes have doubled in size compared to the ones in the ground. So it's growing rapidly. So I'll keep you informed of that. But it's a nice system to go out and watch grow every day. Since Addie Delaney Minerich has been working with me, our newsletter is much more on spot. So we're getting a newsletter out once a month to anybody that wants one. So go to the website at Dr. Delaney, Dr. DrDulaney. .com is spelled out. You can sign up for the newsletter and get one every month. Our members get an additional newsletter directed more at what's going on in the practice. We've started webinars in the practice as well to keep people up to date on and do different topics. So those are available to our members. We're also by popular request from the podcast listeners have developed a podcast logo t-shirt. And that's going to be available. It is available, so you can email me, and we're in the process of setting up a page on the website to have you be able to order this easily. But we're going to have three different colors of the shirt, and I think you'll like what we did with the logo. So you'll have to check that out on the website, and we'll go from there. So without further ado, I'm going to get right into the interview with Ken, and please enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side. Welcome, Ken Botts. Ken and I met at, I believe it was the Sarasota Food Forward event with the Humane Society. And it was the first Humane Society event that I had ever had attended. And it just blew my mind what was going on with schools and universities and all the things that the Humane Society was doing. And, you know, it's a little known fact that again, the Humane Society has a very big influence on the dietetics of a lot of places, and they're just doing great works. And, you know, to me, you're the unsung heroes of what's going on in the plant-based movement. So it's my pleasure to have Ken, who is the Director of Food Services, with me tonight. So welcome, Ken.
Thank you so much, Dr. Delaney. It is wonderful to be on your show. I, of course, as I've shared with you in the past, I'm a huge fan of yours. And if you had a fan club, if you want a fan club, let me know, because I'd like to be the president.
Well, we are getting new podcast logo t-shirts out, so I'm going to make sure I send you one.
Oh my gosh, I want one.
Yep, so that's good. Everybody's been asking about the t-shirts, and we finally got them printed up, so I think you'll like what you receive in the mail. So I'll get your address if I can track you down afterwards. You're moving all over the country so much. So, you know, I know the end of your story, and I don't know a whole lot about the beginning of the story, but when I was reading up on you a little bit, it seems as though as a child you became the activist writing letters to President Nixon.
Yeah, so I remember as a child that I looked at an empty jug plastic jug of milk, and I said, we could do something with this rather than just throwing it away. So I wish I had saved the response from the White House, because it would probably be worth a lot of money right now. But I wrote a letter to President Nixon, and I said, why aren't we recycling this stuff, melting it down and turning it into something else? So I think a lot of that was spurred by a book that I read when I was younger called Diet for a Small Planet, where it talked about our connection to our food choices and the impact that we have on the planet. That's kind of where it all started for me.
Isn't that, I mean, you know, it's, so the plastic back in the, so I'm going to say early 70s, late 60s. Okay. So there was, yeah. So basically there was a plastic milk carton and maybe a butter container that was plastic. But can you imagine the plastic then versus now? I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, I just saw it as wasteful. And then, you know, growing up in the food industry, because my first job in food started when I was 15 and a half years old, you know, I would see the amount of waste that would go not only in the pre-production of the food, but then, you know, watching people eat it and just throw it away. So I've always had this fascination with food and its connection to the impact that we have on the planet, but then also on our health.
So your degree is in food sciences, or what? How did the college Ken go? So you went to college with this still in mind as far as environmental things?
Yeah, I would have to say that I started my university life after high school as not knowing what I wanted to do. I don't think I figured out what I wanted to do until I was like 50, but I always worked in food service, and that was something that my mom got me into. I remember back when I was 15 years old and looking at getting a learner's permit to drive my first car. My mom said, if you want to drive, you have to pay for your gas and your insurance, and you'll need to get a job. And she's the one who really encouraged me to get a job in food service, because she said, if you work in food, you'll always have a job. And she was right.
Wow. And, you know, it's really, really, really blossomed. So you started out, so were you plant-based or vegetarian as a young man, or did that come later?
Yeah, so at the age of 18, after I read Diet for Small Planet, that's when I became vegetarian. And so for me, it was about sustainability in the beginning. And then as the years passed and I graduated from high school, I got into sports, and I immediately saw the impact that eating healthier had on my sports performance. I did competitive judo, which is kind of a weird sport. Most people don't partake of. And I did international competitions. And so when I ate healthier, I noticed that my performance was better. And so I was vegetarian most of my life. And then in 2009, when I was working at the University of North Texas, when we started doing menu development for our vegan dining hall that we did there, that's when I went completely plant-based.
You are a man ahead of your time. I tell you. and I got to say, you know, so Ken and I have spent some time together at three different food forward services, and I would not say competitive judo. I would not feel that Ken was going to take me down as far as that goes, but I have a new respect for Mr. Botts here as far as, you know, he's the mild-mannered, you know, wears the tie by day and the belt by night, so to speak, huh?
Well, my judo instructor used to tell me that if I was ever in a street fight, I would have a competitive advantage because I looked like a baseball player, not a martial arts person. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. That's wild. So it started at North Texas, and you know, it was kind of all about the money there a little bit, right? I mean, because, you know, you want to give the vegan opportunity to a failing cantina that was going on there. And tell us a little bit about that for people that don't know your story there.
Yeah, so, you know, throughout the years, I watched this trend towards more demand for plant-based items. And of course, you know, growing up, it was either vegan or vegetarian. And vegan was a scary word for a lot of people because it had and still does have some political association with it. And so I had seen those trends come and go like every 10 years. Around 2009, 2010, when I was at the University of North Texas, we were getting a lot of requests from our students. And the students were coming to the dining offices and asking for more plant-based options. And it wasn't just the vegan and vegetarian students anymore. It was students that cared about the planet, called themselves flexitarians, and that was a new word at the time. So I started doing some research, and I realized that what was once a trend was actually starting to become the norm. And so we had a failing dining hall there called Mean Green. So it was appropriately named. That was a spirit mark for the university. And we were seeing about 175 transactions a day. So our executive director came up to me and said, you know, what would happen if we transformed that into an all-vegan dining hall? And, you know, for us, it wasn't a risk because we were going to close this dining hall anyway. The exact opposite of what we thought would happen happened. We went from 175 transactions a day within the first 3 weeks we opened it to over 500 transactions a day. That's the students voting with their dollars. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that we hired a very talented chef Wanda White, who now works with me at the Humane Society of the United States. And we just worked on the menu, and she created a menu of familiar foods, things like shepherd's pie and macaroni and cheese that was made with a cashew-based cheese instead of a dairy-based cheese, and just a lot of, you know, fun, familiar foods for the students. And I think that was the key to the success of the program, because we made it all about the food. On top of that, we saw about $165,000 worth of free publicity come through the door, which got the attention of the university. They had never seen anything like that, a firestorm of media just saying, you know, wow, look at what they did at the University of North Texas. They created an all-vegan dining hall. And so it got the attention of not just the university world, but it got the attention of the world in general. I was getting calls from food service directors in Germany and Australia saying, well, you know, congratulations. How did you do it? Why did you do it? And how can you help us do it? So really, I think that was the humble beginning of what for me was the movement into, you know, really helping universities around the world now embrace more plant-based menuing.
And, you know, I think a couple really good take-home messages, you know, that applies to even my population, and I guess, you know, everybody else in general, is, for starters, you took familiar foods and made them plant-based. And mm-hmm. you also, you know, as I've talked about in the past, is cost was an issue because you wanted to have the maximum, the cheapest plate or the least expensive plate for what you could produce. So it was whole foods. It wasn't processed foods. And oftentimes, you know, people say, well, I can't go plant-based because I'm on a budget. And so, I mean, you really, right off the bat, threw that on its ear. And, you know, and then you really showed the world how to do it by saying, okay, we'll take what you usually eat and we'll just make it plant-based.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, because that perception exists within households as well as it does in the institutional food service world, that plant-based food or plant-based menuing is more expensive. We've proven that around the country, when you take a whole foods plant-based approach to this type of food, that your food cost as an institution can go down, as was the example at Arizona State University a couple years ago, by 3 points. Well, when you're a university that's feeding 90,000 students a day, That's a significant amount of money. So they were really excited about that. Bring that into the household, and you're seeing a reduction in a family's grocery bills that could save them a lot of money, improve their health, and make the world a better place.
Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it?
It does. Should be easy.
Should be easy. It should be easy. Just do it. That's all we have to do. Just do it. To me, that just drives home the point. And, you know, and it's such a refreshing thing when you have students. You know, oftentimes in my practice, people say, oh, my kids won't do this. I have teenage boys. You know, they don't want to eat plant-based. Nobody will do this. You know, I have little kids. They're picky eaters. And you're throwing that argument on its ear as well. You're saying these college kids come in. Well, first of all, you're saying, okay, so here's this guy that does judo competitively on an international basis, and he figured out that he does better when he eats a plant-based diet. And then you're going to fast forward, and these kids are coming in and saying, we want more. We want better food. We're tired of this junk food. We want whole food, plant-based food.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And, you know, we hear that a lot. We have a person on our team, Carla Dumas, who I know you know. She's a dietitian, and she is to the K-12 part of our team, what I do for colleges and universities. And, you know, she's got some really great recipes. And she hears that all the time when she goes into these schools that the students won't eat that. It's broccoli, ew. But then if you make it delicious and it's got the eye appeal and it smells good and it tastes good, the students will eat it. It's more, I think, the perception that parents and administrators have because they just haven't successfully put out food that the students will eat. I can use one example of when we were at a university, and I have a picture I'll have to share with you someday. They said, you know, we've got this vegan station and it's not working. And I said, well, show it to me. I want to see what you're serving. Literally, Dr. Delaney wouldn't believe it. It was overcooked broccoli, sitting in some kind of liquid. I don't know what it was, and brown rice. And it was labeled vegan broccoli and vegan brown rice. Of course, the students aren't going to eat that. Why would they? I wouldn't eat it.
And that's the perception. Am I going to have to eat, you know, overcooked broccoli and raw carrots and lettuce? You know, that's the scary part of it. Once people, the eye appeal, once things look good, it's not that big a deal. So you're doing universities and colleges, and that's just really kicking off. You're just going place to place to place at this stage. But you're also branching into hospitals. And is that more difficult, or because I've been fighting that fight at my local hospital, and we almost got you all in for a food forward event, and then the ball got dropped. But we do have a vegan menu now, which is we're making progress. But it's been really, really, really difficult. How's it been going for you?
Yeah, it's been difficult for us too over the last few years. You know, when we started this culinary training program that we have now at the Humane Society of the United States, it started with Harvard University. I had met the food service director there, Martin Breslin. He's the executive chef, and he came to me at a conference and said, "You know, we want to do more plant-based menuing, but we don't know really how to do it, so can you help us?" So that's where we created this training program that you just mentioned. And the very second one that we did, excuse me, was with Calamar Health down in San Diego, California. And they came to us, heard about the work that we did. So, it was Calamar Health, and they came to us and they said, you know, we heard about the work that you did at Harvard, and we'd like you to come in and show us. And so they're now, 2 years later, probably the best example of what a hospital can do. 60% of all of the menu items they serve are plant-based, and they realize that this has an impact not only on the folks that are visiting their hospital for health concerns, but also in the community at large. A lot of folks, because it's kind of a food desert around the hospital, where there's not a lot of healthier options, we'll come to the hospital and actually eat in the cafeteria there and get a good deal on some great food. So I think that for our team, This is the year of healthcare. And the reason I say that is, as you know, there's a lot of research now, peer-reviewed medical research that has, you know, suggested, and we know now that things like processed meats are carcinogenic, that we're eating, you know, too much saturated fats in our diets, and that's causing obesity, which is causing an increase in type 2 diabetes, not only in adults, but also in kids. And of course, the heart disease, which is what you deal with. It's just, you know, the 3 to 4 top killers in the world are diet related. And so hospitals are hearing this message now. And because of the changes in healthcare, they're actually starting to reach out to us. And they're saying, hey, can you help us? Just like when we worked with Harvard. And so now we're seeing an uptick in the amount of asks coming from hospitals. A couple months ago, we did a huge event at Baptist Health South in Florida, which was very successful. We had Carla Dumas go out and do a round of training with the dietitians and with the doctors in the hospital. And then we followed that up with the training for the culinary staff there. And it was a great success. And I know that a lot of medical professionals deal with, you know, getting the administration to buy into this type of programming from the menu standpoint. But when they realize that not only does it have an impact on improving people's health, but it also impacts the staff and the folks that work in the hospital in a positive way, then they're willing to make that change, because not only does it help improve people's health, but it saves bottom line dollars for the hospital in the return of productivity, people getting sick less. And so it's a different dialogue. But once we understand what that conversation is and we can talk to the hospital administrators, then we're starting to see that they're seeing that they can have a big impact by embracing this type of menuing.
Yeah, I mean, that really seems to be the biggest stumbling block. And, you know, I have to say in my community, it starts with the physicians. That they don't actually want to face it, and you know they're really happy eating their poor diets and even delivering the donuts to the floors, you know, and it, you know, if they set that bad example, it's hard for other, you know, other staff to follow up. You know, the holidays are just I call it eating season. You know, it's just about on us. And, you know, typically you show your appreciation to the hospital staff. You know, people bring food in. And I bring a fruit basket in. And, you know, and the staff actually say, you know, thank God somebody's brought something besides, you know, this cookies, and inundate it with cookies and cakes and, you know, ice cream and donuts and all this kind of stuff that are just, you know, lethal to the staff. And if you look at the hospital staffs, you know, it's well over 50% that are significantly overweight. And, you know, part of it is because the hospital cafeteria is not serving anything good. If they're going to grab something quickly, it's, you know, something that's brought in by, a pharmaceutical rep or somebody else, even a doctor. So they're grabbing donuts on the run, grabbing, you know, junk food on the run. They don't want to eat at the hospital cafeteria because it's bad. So they're ordering fast food takeout. And it just leads to obesity in the staff, then injuries and sick time and on and on and on. And it could be, you know, it could be rectified so easy to have, you know, some nice canteen in the hospital where people could actually go and get something healthy.
Yeah, we did. There's some research being done at Northern Arizona Health. And we've been in talks with the researcher and the head clinical dietitian there. And what they did is I think they're in their third round of research now. And so they've more than proven that with a certain group of folks that sign up to partake of this program over a 6-week period, they can actually see a decrease in their illness. They see an increase in their productivity and their energy levels. And all of these folks sign up to be part of a plant-based program. And I think one of the criteria for the program is that they have to have some type of health issues. And all of the people that are in this program are in the hospital. In the hospital in the sense that they work for the hospital, and their families. And so they've seen these massive transformations that we already know about But, you know, of course, the people don't hear, listen to it unless it's been documented and it's peer reviewed and it's, you know, its foundations are pure in that sense. So we're seeing now that these messages are getting out. We've got researchers around the world that have shown that there's an impact, a positive impact on eating better, eating a healthier plant-based diet, and improved health.
Yeah, it's we just have to get the word. I mean, it's coming. It's just so, you know, so slow. And I guess it comes from the ground up. And so the more we can preach, the better. I did a presentation to our local triathlon club, you know, and because people think that because they exercise and they tend to be lean, that they tend to be healthy. And we know you can't out exercise, you know, what you're doing to the inside of your body. So it was funny. I'm giving this talk and I kind of see the faces of, you know, shock and dismay. And I don't know, in a little bit, I felt like I ruined their day a little bit. It's like, you know, oh my God, we have to change our diet. You know, we're going to have to eat healthier now. And, but you could see that it clicked. It's like, just, you know, we just don't think about these things a lot of the times.
Well, the big conversation that we're having now with the athletics departments around at these colleges and universities is the connection between what the athletes are eating, where they've been eating heavy animal protein diets for so many years, because, as you know, our society says that type of protein, when you're an athlete, builds strong muscles and increases your athletic performance. But the dialogue is switching now, and these athletes are paying attention to the impact that saturated fat has on their diet, saturated fat that comes from animal proteins. And the other part of the dialogue is inflammation. And I know that I've seen your presentation so many times, and you talk about that. And that resonates with these athletes to the point now that you're seeing, you know, great football athletes like Tom Brady, or Venus Williams in tennis, who are saying that by eating a healthier plant-based diet, you can improve your athletic performance and decrease your injuries. And if you do get injured, you're going to heal faster. And a lot of that has to do, as you know better than I, with eating a diet that's low in inflammatory ingredients. And a plant-based diet definitely helps with athletic performance. And so I'm excited to see that some of these great athletes are really sharing that message now, and it's resonating with these college and university students. And, you know, those folks have little brothers and little sisters, and that's going to resonate with them. And so I think that what we're seeing now, what we've seen over the last few years with this, with society embracing this type of menu or this type of diet, is just going to continue to grow. And it has to, because of the impact that we're having on our planet as well. So, and it's exciting to see.
What do you think can be done? You know, my son-in-law is involved with college basketball at Georgia State. Mm-hmm. And y'all were there, and they actually are developing a vegan dining hall. But there's an issue with, you know, and it's been in other colleges too. You know, both he and my daughter were varsity athletes at West Virginia University, and there's a push towards the athletes to, you know, be lean, but then they feed them, you know, especially traveling, you know, somewhat junk food, pizza, burgers type of deal. You know, not necessarily, you know, a little bit of, you know, a little bit of healthy choices, but for the most part, there's not a lot of good choices. You know, when my daughter she was plant-based and she was on the rowing team, you know, they kind of made fun of her a little bit. And they would often stop with the team at a restaurant, you know, and she would get like plain white pasta, you know, and maybe a lettuce salad. That would be, you know, her pre-race, you know, meal. But even afterwards, you know, these, you know, the, I guess the contracts to some degree with, you know, different sports drinks companies, and then now the sports drink companies make, you know, protein powders and all these recovery bars and things. What kind of impact, you know, how does that change? You know, what kind of things could be supplied through the colleges to make that better?
Yeah, it's a complicated question with an easy solution. The solution is that we have to start with the consumer. And so you know, the work that you're doing and the work that so many others are doing to educate the consumers about the impact that they're having on their health. You know, it really starts at home, and it's up to us as individuals to demand the type of food that we want on the table. And so as athletes at colleges and universities or even in professional sports, they just have to put their foot down and say, you know, we want different food on the table. And so when that starts to happen, the folks that provide that food are going to listen, just like we did back at the University of North Texas when the students said, we want more plant-based options. In the college and university world, those students are the customers. Those students are the ones that pay the bills for the dining program that exists there on campus. And so their voice is very loud. And so I think that it really starts there. Our program, our culinary training program, is designed to help support that at the culinary level. And so you've got culinarians who hear the message from the students, and they want to make that change, but they just don't know how. And the reason for that is our system is broken. They're not teaching it in the culinary schools. They're not getting this information from some of the big food shows that we go to. And so really it boils down to just going out there and influencing the influencers. And, you know, that was the humble beginnings of this program, where we said that if you're going to change a culture of food, you have to start in the kitchen. And that kitchen is run by chefs. And so that's the work that we do, is with these chefs who are putting that food on the plate.
Yeah. Have you ever, I'm going to try to see if I can find it. The book called The Purple Cow by Seth Godin. Have you read any of his books?
I haven't. I've heard of it.
Yeah. So he wrote this book, Purple Cow. And the long and the short of it, or at least my major take home messages, is, you know, when you're trying to do a movement such as plant-based nutrition, when clearly it's a minority, you know, about 6% of the population is vegetarian, probably maybe a little bit more. You have to go after the sneezers. He calls them the sneezers, you know. Yeah. So you get the guy that wants the change, and you get the guy that wants the change, that wants to tell his buddies about the change. You know, so he sneezes what he, you know, so you get him plant-based, and he sneezes the good word to everybody else that, you know, his mm-hmm. surrounding. And then you actually create a demand for it. If you go to the mainstream, you know, in the big, you know, the burger arena, french fry eating, you know, okay, I got a food ticket and I can eat all the stuff I want arena, you're not going to influence as much people. But if you get those that group that's you know, really interested, then they can be the big change.
Yeah, it's true. And that's, you know, I just spoke at a sustainability conference for higher education in San Antonio a couple weeks ago. And I was just, you know, it wasn't a food conference, and I was really pleased to hear some of the students that have been touched by our program, and some of the professionals in sustainability that have been involved with our program at the colleges and universities. And they were sharing the message for us. And so it's a great example of that sneeze. They were sneezing the good word. I remember I was in one of the conference sessions, and they were doing tabletop exercises with all of these sustainability professionals on how they could serve better food in their colleges and universities. And I heard at three or four of the tables in the room, oh, you need to contact the Humane Society of the United States and ask them about their free forward food training program. And so, you know, I know that we're having the impact that we designed this for. And, you know, as the program continues to grow now, we've got three chefs on our team. We're probably going to have 10 chefs by the end of next year. We're working with the largest food service contractors in the world, Sodexo, Aramark, and Compass. And those programs are evolving and crossing the borders into Canada, Mexico, the UK, and Brazil. So, you know, we're definitely having an impact, but we're just one organization. So, you know, it takes that one voice, like we're talking about, that one student or that one doctor like yourself, or that one person who's going to the grocery store to ask for these options and make them available. And these institutes, these grocery stores, they'll start to listen, and they are.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing the change, you know, that we're seeing in the grocery store. I was actually speaking with a chef that's a patient of mine, and, you know, trying to pull, you know, to get him to, you know, see the plant-based. And he actually has an ice cream store as well and did not know about dairy-free ice cream. And it's like, just think of this. I said, you know, it's almond milk, it's ice cream. I said, Ben and Jerry's, you know, it's like, you know, didn't realize it. And it's like, it's fabulous ice cream, you know, and, you know, what you can do plant-based and at a cheaper level, you know, more sustainable, less, you know, impact. This guy has all kinds of health problems. He's a chef, you know, by the food he's actually creating. And, you know, and so and I said, you could, you know, and I was just really, you know, I was working on him for him and I was working on him for me as far as, you know, it's like, if you start cooking this way, you know, other people, you'll get healthier and other people will become healthier and, you know, and people will flock to your restaurant and, you know, but it's just this, education piece we have, when we have our conferences every year, you know, we have to educate a chef that, you know, to cook without sugar, oil, or salt for our conference, you know? And at first they're just, they kind of, you know, they're all like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And then they find it, you know, such a challenge and a chance to be creative again. And then they embrace it and everybody has a good time with it.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned chefs and that's something I speak about a lot at conferences, especially the culinary conferences. The Culinary Institute of America and the Harvard School of Public Health have a program called Menus of Change, which is a big think tank collaborative between food service professionals and scientists and researchers and all these people coming together at one conference and saying, how can we fix this broken food system? And of course, the solution is more plant-based items on the plate. And they created a website where they look at the top 50 chefs around the world that are putting more plants on the plate. Some of them are traditional chefs, like Jose Andreas, who created a restaurant concept called Beefsteak that celebrates the beefsteak tomato. And of course, you can get more than just beefsteak tomatoes at his restaurant, but it's healthier options now. And that concept, his concept has gone from, you know, a couple of locations in D.C. to now into what we call the non-traditional or the college and university world. So we're starting to see these restaurants start on the street and make their way into the retail component of colleges and universities. You've got fast food chains, which are starting to serve healthier options. I mean, even Taco Bell, which is, you know, one of my guilty pleasures when I'm traveling. You know, I love to go there and get a bean burrito with no cheese and extra onion. That's my thing. And they announced their relationship with the American Vegetarian Association last year, and they've got a certified vegetarian menu. You can go in there, leave the cheese and the dairy off, and you've got a healthier option. So we're seeing that impact not only full-service fancy restaurants, but even on the street. We're seeing better options show up. And that's all happening because of consumer demand.
So Aramark and Sodexo, so how are they going to help?
Yeah, so what we know about these food service contractors is they feed, you know, billions of plates of food to people around the country, around the world. And they feed food to, they run food services in colleges, universities, in the military, in hospitals. And so they're feeding a good portion of the folks that are out there in these various institutions that touch most of our lives. And so we started working with Compass, a group last year, and or 2 years ago, and we helped them create a concept called Rooted, which is an all plant-based concept that is available to all of their institutions that are part of their program. And any of these institutions can bring that concept in now. It's a turnkey menu-driven concept that features an all plant-based menu. Their commitment to sustainability is huge, and so they continue to grow that program. Recently, Aramark made an announcement that they were partnering with the Humane Society of the United States to create a plant-based training, culinary training program. And so we're in the process of working with them to roll that out, and we'll start seeing more of that happening throughout the year 2018. And there's going to be some menu development associated with that. And so it's really exciting because these companies are feeding a large portion of our population. And so by encouraging them to put healthier, more sustainable food on the plate, we're really having the largest impact that we can have on our society's health and on the impact that our food choices have on the planet by working with these large organizations.
Your motto, I guess, or your tagline is changing the world, making the world a better place one plate at a time. But, you know, I'm sitting here, and that's wonderful. I love it. You need a T-shirt.
I'm going
to
do it.
Yeah, you have to get a T-shirt, a bunch of plates. I can see it, you know, veggies on it. But, you know, it's so exciting. It almost seems like it's so close to just being an avalanche of takeover with the plant-based world. It almost, you know, it's so close to almost being there that, you know, many plates at a time as opposed to one plate at a time. I think it's, you know, really going to take off here in the short term as opposed to the long term. I mean, it really seems like it's really ready to go, and it's so exciting, and it's so, you know, it's fun to be a part of something like this.
Yeah, the change, you know, started happening in 2009, 2010, and it really started becoming the norm, and that continues to grow year over year. And, you know, when we sit down to eat, we can play a role in addressing one of the world's most pressing problems, which is the impact that our food has on our health. The other problem is the impact that our food choices have on the earth. And then, of course, the work that I do with the Humane Society of the United States is the impact that that has on the animals that are part of that chain as well. And so, you know, we have a personal responsibility that begins at home. It begins in the workplace. And it's up to us as individuals to create the kind of world that we want to live in and the kind of earth that we want to live on. And so we have to set the table for change. And, you know, that goes back into my little tagline of one plate at a time. You know, with these large institutions, we're having a bigger impact, and we're impacting millions of plates at a time every year.
Fantastic. Well, it's a pleasure as always getting to speak to you. I feel like I got a bonus. I didn't have to go anywhere to hear you talk this evening. So that was great.
And I didn't have to go anywhere to talk to you. I always enjoy it when it's always just such a pleasant surprise when I'm speaking at a conference and I see that you're going to be at the conference. It always brings me great joy because you're a gift to the world, and the information that you share is just so valuable. And for the folks that have gotten to see you speak or the people that listen to your podcast, Dr. Delaney is top notch, and she knows what she's doing. So definitely listen to her.
I appreciate that. And we share, we can't stop without talking about our other thing that we share. And it's our Orange Cat Fellas friends. You know, I have Vinny and you forget your cat's name.
Jacob.
Yeah. So we've been doing, I did a little catter day for you there with Vincenzo. Yeah. So I'm surprised he's I don't know where he is tonight. He usually helps me with the podcast. I thought sure he'd be here to talk to you, but he's usually walking around the microphone.
I always look forward to your catter day posts, and I love orange cats. I've always had an orange cat in my life. So, Jacob is my favorite, animal on the planet.
Yeah, they certainly have personalities, and you know, it's just funny. We have the two German shepherds, and Vinny, I don't know if he thinks he's a dog or he just knows that he rules the dogs. I haven't figured out which one it is exactly, but they pay attention to what Vinny has to say.
Well, you know, and it's something that I think people are starting to realize is that, you know, we love our pets at home, but we don't make that connection, with the kind of food that we're putting on our plates. And we're putting animals on our plates, and it's cows, it's chickens, it's pigs, and they're just as caring and kind as the animals that we have in our houses. And so, you know, I think it's a message that people need to start thinking about, because those animals, and the amount of animals that we're killing every year for the food that we eat are suffering for that. But it's also having an impact to raise that number of animals on our planet, and it's having an impact on our health. So the message you bring to the table and the work that we're doing hopefully is having an impact. And I'm just so excited that I've had this opportunity to be on your podcast so we can even share more of that message.
Yep, that sounds, it's great. And again, thanks, Ken, for taking time to speak with me. And I look forward to seeing you in person soon.
Yeah, it's going to happen. The universe works that way.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ken. Good night.
You're welcome. Good night.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Ken. I know I certainly did. If you want to follow Ken on Twitter, he's at Ken Botts. It's capital K-E-N, capital B-O-T-T-S. And look at the Humane Society and see all the great things that they're doing as well. Please check out my website at drdelaney.com. Again, with lots of exciting things happening. Sign up for our newsletter. We'd love to send you 5 free recipes that we like. And we'll be posting a lot of holiday recipes and things like that on the website. And the shirts. The shirts are coming, so you'll have a chance to order those. We'd love to hear from you at jamie@drdelaney.com as well if you have any questions. So eat your veggies, get out and move around, and be careful and eat plant-based on this holiday eating season. Take care.